German.
Come on! Welcome to episode 2 of Dynamite Medi. It's a podcast where I'm going to be swapping games with my two pals here. I'm Mick Clockerty. To my right here, we've got the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Andy Mack.
What's happening?
And straight across from me, we've got everybody's favourite computer hacker, although I probably disagree with that term. It's Mr. Michael McCormick.
How's it going?
Alright. Boys, how's it going? What you been up to?
Oh, all sorts, mate, all sorts. Again, just been running about after the rain. Sorry.
Andy has got a peculiar habit of turning his head away from the microphone every time he goes to speak.
It's because it's a thought process.
Get Mr. McCormick gesturing at him wildly to position himself.
When I'm trying to put a thought through my head, I tend to look away, and I don't know why. I think I'm sort of consulting my brain, and at the same time I'm facing away from the microphone. I'll make sure it stops now.
Don't worry about it. Mick, what have you been up to yourself?
So usually we talk about the games we've been playing. I've kind of just been playing Shining Force 2 and Podcast Editing Simulator 2018.
That's a good sign.
What do you sort of think of the first episode after having listened to it? Do you think it went well?
I don't think we should be. This is a bit too metatextual. I
don't like listening to sound my own voice, man.
You've got a lovely voice.
Oh, thank you very much.
So one thing I noticed about the podcast, and I've never realised this before, but listening back to my own voice, I don't roll my R's like any normal Scottish person does, which I didn't realise. I've always heard it in my head, but apparently I don't actually do it when I speak.
It's like you've got an accent of your own creation.
And I said it to my girlfriend. It's like, do you know that I don't roll my R's? And it's like, oh yeah, of course. Like, I find it quite endearing. It's like, what else have people not been telling me? what's been kept from me?
It's like a uni accent. It's not
really.
It's not native to Scotland, but it's there.
Well, I discovered that I'm a little high voice loser. I was like, I bet I sound like a pretty cool motherfucker. And then I played that thing back and had the mandatory 2 minutes of I don't fucking sound like that before I was like, yeah, that's me.
Also, listen back to it. I heard there's certain parts where you can hear the glass clinking in my Jack and Coke.
I like the little ice cube sound.
The ice cube sound.
It was a nice feature.
I was like, oh no, that's so unprofessional.
That's
I've been listening to other podcasts and I've started hearing it there as well.
Yes.
So yeah, it's not just us. So that's
weird. We're up there with the fucking top cunts.
Anyways, retro games. Well, G-Force has got a fully stocked retro section again.
Some free advertising there. Shout out to G-Force, I guess.
G-Force, shout out to
Damien Murray, shout out to Damien Murray.
In the past, they always had a decent selection, but it's making a comeback. I think, obviously, we had GameStops or whatever we've got over here, Game. I think it's sort of ruined the industry a wee bit in terms of physical releases, and it's sort of paved the way for a retro resurgence, as it were. The only thing that isn't there is Saturn games. I'm trying to get me a Saturn game.
Well, you get a vinyl effect with retro games, man. See, when I started collecting cartridges, I'm going to be a wee wank and call them cartridges. A couple of years ago, going on fucking eBay and shit like that, or if you went to a car boot sale or fucking a charity shop, you were getting the things for peanuts.
Aye.
New people are aware of the fact that fucking nerds like us will pay £15 for Sonic 3 or whatever.
Yeah,
like,
it's niche, isn't it? Everybody wants to revisit their childhood.
But everyone wants to, I think, like, you know, everything's online. It's not really tangible. Some people want a kind of tangible physical thing that they can hold and they're willing to pay for it.
Oh, absolutely. There's nothing better than being able to hold the actual thing in your hand, you know?
They brought out Street Fighter 2 Anniversary cartridges.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, physical ones that would play in the SNES or whatever. But they had to put a warning label on it that said that it might make it blow up. Because they made them out of these kind of fancy plastics and stuff, or it meant they had to put some certain different chip in it. Like this is fucking me doing pseudoscience. Like, if you'd researched this bit, you'd be able to say what it was. But yeah, they made consoles explode.
Yeah. Samsung, take note. Released to that was Sonic Mania. I don't know if you've seen that, full Bifter, mate. It comes with an interchangeable cover.
And it makes it look like a Sega Mega Drive game.
It's magic, so
cool!
Or a Genesis game, yeah, it's great.
There was a special edition as well that was released, which actually featured a cartridge. Now, you couldn't play this cartridge, right? You couldn't play it. But it came with a real gold-plated Sonic ring.
What? Made a real gold?
A real Sonic ring.
think if you took that on a night out with you or something and you get stabbed, as long as you ran after it and caught it, you would be immortal.
You wouldn't get by your bouncer. No chance, man.
What's that? You get anything on you there, mate? Let's pat you down. What's this? Oh, it's actually an anniversary edition Sonic ring.
That's what Tony Montana used to say.
Not the night. I've been playing shitloads of Mega Man 1. Fucking the OG Mega Man with my flatmate Sam, who fucking shout out to Samba because he's kindly loaned us his microphone again.
Aye, aye.
This is going to be a repeat of episode 1 because we had 7 shout outs. I think which shout outs are going to be worthless by the time we're finished with this.
I'm being very flippant with shout outs, not to take anything away from the one I just gave to Sam, but I gave a shout out to the G-Force guy 2 minutes before it. Do you know what I mean?
Shout out to Brumme boys.
Shout out to the Brumme young team. however you call it. Yep.
See you at Bonfire, 5th of November. Our whole day printing session, man. We get plates. We actually get the pallets off of Cost Cutters. It's usually like 50 or 60 that they keep behind the shop. Absolute.
Do you remember when, for Bonfire night, you were building a Bonnie? Do you ever remember going up and defending the Bonnie in case other cunts try to come and take bits of wood and fucking detritus and boards and stuff off yours to take it to theirs? I remember standing guard at Bonfires.
It was like Age of Empires.
That would be a decent strategy game, by the way.
Did you get one of those priests that would convert somebody for the other young team to your young team?
All the time, mate. All the time.
Order. Oh, no.
And then the players get phoned.
But the original Mega Man, if I had had that game when I was like 8 years old, I would have never finished a fucking level.
It's rock solid, isn't it?
It's so hard. Sam's fucking beat all the Robot Masters bar Fireman. I beat Fireman. There you go. I've been Mega Man'd up.
Talk about the difficulty of Mega Man.
We'll be talking about the difficulty of Mega Man X.
Oh,
this is OG.
Get it right, man. Get it right.
The cool 90s version of Mega Man.
It's better, but we'll go into that. No, other than that, I was working for fucking 4 hours this morning.
That's horrendous. That wasn't.
I was hungover. Went a bit tonto on a bucket last night.
I was hungover and I had that thing where for like the first hour of work, I was still drunk. I don't know if I was just fucking typing nonsense into a system or that. I can't remember like my first chunk of work.
Well, I'm trying to find a physical copy of Shenmue. Anybody can get me one.
You're talking about the Xbox release.
I've got a Dreamcast.
Got the OG.
I've got the old Xbox version as well, Shenmue 2, which is horse shit.
Was the Xbox One of Shenmue 2 the one that didn't have English voice acting?
No. Shenmue 2 was originally only released in EU, came right at the end of Dreamcast's life in 2001. I don't know why I meant to get shafted, but it was only a PAL release. It wasn't released in America until Xbox release, I think, was in 2002, and that featured an English translation. The Dreamcast version only had the Japanese translation. Japanese
voice with subtitles.
With the English subtitles.
Okay.
So people say that they prefer the old Japanese one better because it's more true to the story that Yu Suzuki was trying to tell.
Does the voice acting not get a bit of kind of camp fun? Like, part of the charm of Shenmue I kind of got was that it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
Like, it's like watching a kung fu movie that's badly dubbed. It's not meant to be, but that's the impression I get as part of the enjoyment of Shenmue.
Yeah.
It's like watching a Bruce Lee film or something.
Yeah, see, it depends how you're coming at it, but obviously it's got a charm, you could call it.
Maybe that's how can that not be funny?
That might have made more sense in the original Japanese.
Aye, and then you go in, you've got to beat them at snooker and all that, it's magic. But if you're looking at it for Yu Suzuki's point of view, he's like a madman, he created this 7-part epic stretching from a wee town in Japan all the way to across Hong Kong via Kowloon City. Everything is in this game. And he obviously came at it from a serious point of view, so I don't think the charm thing was intended, but you know, it's a byproduct to the culture.
And the Japanese translation, he probably walks up to people and goes, "Hello, son of peasant, I am on a quest, I am looking for my father, do you happen to know of any mercantile sailors?" Like, whereas it's, "Hey, I'm looking for sailors!"
Also, a guy walking up to random ways in the street stealing their boy and that, I mean, you would start to ask questions, wouldn't you? I mean, it's a way to murder.
We were in your gaff. Did you not show me that you could kick a ball off a Wayne's face or something like that?
One quick time event. Yeah. Yeah.
Is that if you pass or fail the quick time event?
No, you walk me through your wee town past the phone box. I can't remember. Is it Sakura Gawaka or something it's called? And you can always pass this wee guy. I think sometimes he's playing with a cat, but in this case, he's playing with a ball.
Depends on what time of day it is.
Depends on the time of year as well.
Aye.
It goes, hey, Dio, let's play soccer. So you play soccer. But they know him, remember the bad guy for Doug? Roger.
Roger Klotz.
He walks around the corner, right? And somebody's just spitting image of him. Starts to get a bit wide, right? So you just take your wee guy's ball, and there's a quick time event, and if you time it right, you smash your warrior. It's fucking heat.
I fucking love baddies in 90s cartoons. They've always got leather jackets on, they've always got a wee guitar riff. They woke up going, hey loser.
I reckon it's because the folk that got into writing or making cartoons were the wee losers in school. Yeah. So the baddies were always the cool kids that gave them a bit of grief.
Aye. So aye, that's what I've been up to. Obviously that and Mega Man and trying to be a dad as well, man. Oof, hard innings, but you know what? Well worth it, man.
How's it about AJ Potter?
Oh, he's a retro gamer in the making. I was just going to say, Mega Man X took up most of my week, but we'll get into that later. But the wee man's been sort of, he likes all the colours, the tunes and all that, and he started to recognise that what I'm doing with my hands sort of correlates with what's happening on the screen as well. So it's 7 months, he's quite a colour.
Is it about a pain in the hole when you're trying to defeat Storm Eagle and then you have to stop to change an app page? Yeah, like that?
I could imagine that was a problem on the NES, but there's a pause button on this thing.
Like anything of note, just shining, forcing it up?
Yeah, pretty much. It's kind of got my hooks in me, to be honest. So I've not really spent much time playing anything else.
Fair play. Right, well, would you like to talk about why you picked for Mr. Andy Mack here the game Mega Man X for the SNES?
Yeah, so like the 16-bit generation, there's kind of two eras of nostalgia for me with 16-bit. So growing up, I actually did have a Sega Mega Drive. So my memories of the Sega Mega Drive was when I was, I don't know, maybe between the ages of 6 and 10 or something. But then later, maybe the kind of tail end of primary school, start of high school, where kind of everyone was really into Pokemon fever was like sweeping the nation,
right.
And I didn't have a Game Boy, but I wanted to kind of in on this action because everyone at school was talking about it. So I discovered emulators, started emulating the Game Boy, and then I started emulating like the SNES and all those games that I didn't have growing up. So Mega Man X, it was kind of that period in my life. I got super into Mega Man. I just thought the characters and the story and that was all really cool. I had a big crush on Zero. I thought Zero was the coolest guy in the world. So I got right into Mega Man X, and I don't think Andy really had much experience with the SNES, and he was always way better at me at shooters and platformers and stuff, so I thought he'd be quite into Mega Man X. Interesting hearing what he thought about it.
Andy?
Yeah, I mean, I always knew about Mega Man. Going right back to me and Michael used to be part of an online fan gaming community called Sonic Fan Games Headquarters, was it?
Yep.
Shout out to SFGHQ.
And on there, well, everybody was obviously hardcore Sonic fans. There was a big kind of Mega Man fan base as well. The art style, particularly, like, remember the wee six you used to get on posts on the message board?
Yeah.
Everybody had a sort
signature
of
images.
Yeah. So that's where I always knew it existed. Always knew it was quite a famous game, well thought of. But because I didn't have a SNES until quite recently, I never really got to play it. I don't know why, because the game is absolutely fantastic. It's got to be one of the top five platformers, 2D side-scrolling platformers I've played.
Oofed!
Yeah,
high praise there, right?
It's got to be, man, and I've played a lot. The minute the game kicks off, it's non-stop.
Tremendous.
That tune kicks in, whatever that is. I can see Mega Man fans over the world going nuts there because
that's not the tune from level one.
Right away, you're launched right into a prologue. You don't know that at the time, you think this is just level one. Most games would just carry on, first level, and then second level, third level, but no. This game is not linear. It's not a case of finish the first level, go on to the second one. After the prologue, you actually get to select your stage, and each stage has its own theme based on the characteristics of the level boss. Now I'll just go into what I mean by that. There's eight bosses in the first section of the game. There's two sections. Eight bosses each have an association with the elements. Is that fair to say?
Aye.
So like one would maybe have a fire weakness.
The
one would maybe have a water weakness or that electricity weakness. And
your original one, they did elemental weaknesses, so the bosses were very much fucking lazy names. It was Fireman and Iceman and Electric Man.
Yeah.
Whereas with X, they did these things, but also they made them animals.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
It's like an octopus, a penguin, a fucking
a cooanger.
Yeah, sort of, sort of fleshed out the characters a bit more. And there's because it's not linear. There's linear, sorry. You can sort of change the order that you beat these bosses, and depending on the order you pick, sort of it sort of decides what difficulty you're playing the game at. So, for instance, to beat each boss, you can either do it with your default hand cannon, or you can get a pick, or you can get a power up from the previous level. That makes the boss a lot easier. So you've got a choice whether you want to bust your arse and just take about 50 tries trying to get by the boss, or you can get the power up and you can probably beat him in one or two goes.
See, that's something that I think that we're kind of losing out a wee bit with, like, the age of the internet and game FAQs and stuff, because back in the day you wouldn't have known that there was an order that makes the game much easier. But if you find that out on the internet, you're like, well, it'd be daft not to date in that order.
It would have been one of these things of playground lore.
Yeah.
Where there might have been one kid that was fucking good at Mega Man who would go, nah man, you need to beat Chill Penguin, and then he lets you beat Spark Mandrel. Like, you usually got somebody that had played something and kind of knew tips. Or maybe the fucking one kid that had that magazine that had the Mega Man X issue or
yeah,
something like that, do you know what I mean? Like,
I mean, you could get through this game probably if you knew going into the game that obviously you could pick your own difficulty essentially, then you could probably get through the game in a couple of days, maybe even less if you really put your mind to it. But I mean, I'm sure the hardcore fans of this game don't use the power-ups, is that right? They just go right into it with the hand cannon.
The speedrun community has a category for Mega Man X, I think, that's Buster Only, it's called, where they don't use any power-ups, they just use the default hand cannon.
Okay. I can imagine that. I tried my hand a few times. I need to ask a question here. You know how you've got the order, the easy order that you can beat the bosses?
Yeah.
The one you sent in here starts off with Chill Penguin, followed by Spark Mandrel, followed by Armadillo, followed by Launch Octopus, followed by Boomer Cowanger, followed by Sting Chameleon.
What is a Cowanger?
It's a stag beetle.
Ah.
Well, I don't know why they didn't. I don't know why they didn't translate it to stag beetle.
Clears that up. Sting Chameleon, Storm Eagle, and then obviously signing off with Flame Mammoth. Now. this is the consensus that this is the easy mode, essentially.
You tend to start with Chill Penguin because you get the light dash and his level, and he's quite easy to just beat with your buster.
Can you hit Chill Penguin with the dash? Does it take?
He doesn't do damage. He just moves you around.
So that's why it's good to start with him, because you can just use your X blaster on him.
You said you had a question. What was the question?
That was the question.
Can you hit him with a light dash?
Yes.
Okay. No, the light dash just makes things easier. If you get that at the start, it makes you a bit more manoeuvrable.
One thing I do remember doing that makes me feel a bit like a dunderheed is I was going to the pause menu to equip my power up when I realised about level 5 that you could just press the trigger button.
I didn't actually know that.
In the original Mega Man games, it was all just pause menu. You had to just stop to change gun.
So you had to go in that. So, have we got time? I'll go through the weaknesses.
We have got plenty of time. You can talk about whatever you like.
Right, okay, so the first boss, Chill Penguin, you just get tore into it with your X-Blaster. Just set about that. See, Chill Penguin, once you've sussed him out, man, he's quite easy, isn't he? You stand a certain distance away from him, it does the same attack over and over again. If you move
classic design bosses, they've all got patterns, you can watch them and learn, and it's all very clever.
Bit of Splatterhouse too.
The thing about Mega Man is though, the sequences that the bosses do aren't linear either. It all depends where you're situated on the screen. So, for instance, like if it could be shooting projectiles at you one second, and depending on where you are on the screen, it might go into its other attack. There's no like sequence, if you know what I mean. the sequence is totally random, depending on your position on the screen. That's what I got from it anyway. I could be wrong with that, but that's definitely the notion I got from it.
I liked the fact that, how many Sega Mega Drive games did you have when you were wee, where if they were solid, you did not see what happened past level 2? With Mega Man X, you didn't have to beat anything to see most of the content.
Yeah,
you could try different levels.
If you were struggling with a boss, you didn't have to give up, you could just try something else.
Yeah.
Aye, so, Chill Penguin, it says here that his primary weakness is the fire wave. Now I'm guessing that's something you get later on.
Well,
that'll be real mammoth.
Flame mammoth, yeah.
It kind of goes in a circle, but you have to start at some point in the circle, and you don't want to start at flame mammoth because he's solid.
He's solid, aye.
I want to hear more about what you liked about it.
Right. What I liked about Mega Man X.
Yes.
Right. I liked the format of the game. So, every stage starts off with an action part, just your standard 2D platforming fair, but with an edge, there's so many things coming at you at once, you know, you're going to die numerous times, but you're that pumped up because of the music and obviously the action going on, that you're just going to turn it right back on again.
Forgiven as well, there's no game over situation, get punted back to the main screen.
Punted back in. And also, come on, the wall jump.
Wall jump is... See, if you're used to X and you try to play that fucking original Mega Man and you can't wall jump, it's maddening.
Can you not jump in Mega Man? What?
No.
I thought I was...
Can't dash. You can't charge up the Buster either. That only came in about Mega Man 4 or something like that.
I didn't figure you could do that until fourth level or something like that.
You're just punting lemons at people, just shooting the normal wee...
Lemons.
A lot of people call it lemons. It looks like
they
a wee lemon
look like
that
lemons.
Files out the...
That sure does look like lemons.
Yeah. X starts off with a lot of abilities that you have to unlock as Mega Man, which I guess like folk that were familiar with playing the Mega Man games on the NES kind of knew all about those, so you just start out with those.
Also, what I loved was, you know, I'm a sucker for these things. Golden Axe, we can jump on the rig.
You like the mount.
Aye.
But you get a mech, is it you call it? Like a robot you can jump into.
That was cool, you can punch guys, yeah.
I like that. I also like the fast pace moments. See when you're on it's a skateboard type, I think, and you just bust through the level. But you've got to watch, because if you don't jump at the right point, then you just die. But if you jump at the right point, you end up getting to fight the boss. I like all that stuff. Do you know what I'm talking about here?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all that stuff. But the game is... I'm trying to think if it's fast-paced or if it's just crazy. The game's pretty crazy.
It's quite hectic.
Yeah.
But there's a really good video on YouTube called... I think it's called Sequelitis, where this guy examines games and their sequels to see if the sequels have improved on it or changed. So he looks at Mega Man versus Mega Man X and see the prologue in Mega Man X... Every single little minute detail in that is so deliberate. Like, everything is done to teach you how to play the game. Like, at no point does it flash up on screen and say, wall jump now. You destroy that big bee and it crashes a platform down, and there's no other way to get back up. But you try a couple of things and you realise, shit, I can wall jump. The whole prologue stage is that. I think everything in the fucking design is fucking pretty deliberate, man. I don't think it's hectic or chaotic. Everything's fucking...
It's not cheap either. There's no kind of cheap deaths. All the deaths are your fault, which is the mark of a well-designed game.
You were saying that you didn't like the cheap shot in Splatterhouse, like the boss dying.
This game is full of them, man.
Do you think?
Well, full of them in terms of you couldn't go... one step without a projectile flying over your fucking head.
See?
Aye, but that's not cheap. Like, if you know what you're doing, you know what's coming, but, I think.
Mega Man...
I've got a cheap shot for you.
Right, go for it.
Right. A cheap shot is this, right? You're fighting a boss. The boss is doing his swing at the bottom, right? Swinging his wee arms about, whatever. And you're jumping up the wall trying to evade him, right? Now, this boss has only been shooting projectiles and going from side to side. You're hiding up the top corner. All of a sudden, the boss jumps up the top corner. I never knew he had that in his armoury.
But you're not psychic. You don't know what a boss can do before you get to him.
Ah, fair enough. But I spent 5 minutes fighting the fucking thing before it ripped that man out of his fucking toolbox. I
like things like that, because you think you're safe, and then the boss is like, no.
Mega Man X for me has that factor of, see, when I die in it, I never feel like I've been cheated. If I die, I feel like it was my fault, and I think that's a good game design. I don't feel like a game's fucked me. I feel like I've fucked up.
You don't feel like the controls are fucking you over anything, which I got a bit from Splatterhouse too.
Yeah,
it's clunky.
The design of this game also is sort of unique in a way, for the tent that I've played before. For instance, I went into this game thinking I was going to get a Gunstar Heroes and a Contra vibe for it, a Metal Slug.
Aye.
No, it was quite different. I mean, it has got elements of the running gun genre, however, I'd say it's made a platformer.
It's more running gun.
You think so?
Yeah.
Yeah, more running gun, aye. But I'd say, to be honest, I think that this game, the running gun aspect is only half it. I think the bosses are like the other 50% of the game.
The bosses are really memorable set pieces. It's got that Metal Gear Solid vibe where if you talk to somebody that played Mega Man X when they were a kid, they won't be able to tell you much about levels, but they'll fucking remember the bosses.
You can tell they really enjoyed making the bosses. They put a lot of effort into it. As you're saying, they probably about 50% on the bosses and 50% on the actual levels.
Because it's a puzzle, isn't it? It's like rock, paper, scissors. Mm-hmm. When you fight the boss, once you've sussed them out, you know, it's a different thought process you're using from, say, Sonic. Because in Sonic, you just need to remember the sequence. But Mega Man kind of takes that further. And that once you've worked out the sequence, the boss will just do something completely different, so you can't memorise it. So you've got to keep your wits about you at all times. I like that aspect.
Mega Man is the first kind of Mega Man X is the first example I can think of the kind of thing that you get loads in kind of modern games, where it's like they've kind of taken RPG elements, like your character kind of gets new abilities and learns new things. I don't remember ever seeing that in a platformer before, but in Mega Man X, like as well as getting the abilities from bosses, you also get the pods where you meet Dr. Wily and you get, not Dr. Wily, Dr. Light, and you get the dash and you get all the upgrades and stuff.
What did you call that purple guy again you were talking about before we started recording?
Vile.
So when you fight Vile at the end of the prologue, and you get, it's one of those scripted fights where you're supposed to lose, and fucking that hot fucking piece of ass Zero glides in with his hair gliding in the air. It's
beautiful, he long blonde hair.
Sweeps in and he goes, X, you're not powerful enough to fucking fight Sigma yet. You have to go through these trials to get more powerful. Like, he kind of sets you on the
World of Ruin over again.
The hero's journey. Oh man. In fact, you kind of start off in a World of Ruin.
It's like, right now you beat the bosses, now beat them again, fucking tuned up the 11. So what I mean? But, and I mean, another thing I really loved, the aesthetic of the game and the art style.
Oh yeah, so cool.
Bright, vibrant. You know,
you texted me that it reminded you of Sonic.
A wee bit, you know, in terms of vibrancy with the sprites, a lot of works went into these sprites, you can see that. A lot of platformers, you know, the animation of the sprites and stuff like that, you can tell they put a lot of work into. It's the same case as point with Sonic. I think that they made Sonic in a way that the sprite was the most important part of the game because that's what they're marketing it on.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
I think they've done the same sort of thing here. Like they've sort of rebooted the Mega Man series and they thought, right, let's make Mega Man a character that the kids are going to remember.
Because, like, look at him there, right? We this is a fucking shitty thing to do in a podcast, but we have Mega Man, the original one, paused on the TV just now. And if you look at the original Mega Man, he looks like a little boy. He's like child, mega child. Whereas Mega Man X, they went for this rad 90s cool thing. They made him this fucking souped up, cool as fuck looking robot. Like,
Mega Drive!
Yeah, I think the original Mega Man kind of reminds me of, like, is it Astro Boy?
Yeah, that's exactly what he looks like.
Yeah, but kind
apart from on the box art where he looks like a middle-aged Chinese man.
Yeah, like, I think it maybe mirrors the kind of, where sort of like anime and that was going in Japan, because you know the older ones in the 80s, it was kind of based off Astro Boy, and then it got a bit more kind of grown up and like almost like your
Dragon Ball Z,
your kind of cyberpunk sort of stuff.
That's
the thing. Yeah, and it added a bit of story as well. It kind of made the story a bit more grown up, where it's about a kind of like a virus that's making the robots and humans used to get on, and then this virus, the Maverick virus, turned some of them evil, and you're kind of like trying to fight them again, try to turn them good and stuff like that.
The art styles, I mean, you're going to, I'd say it's less forgetful than the old Mega Mans. It's been made in such a way that you're not going to forget this art style, you know?
Speaking of art style, I would defer over to our sound guy. You want to gauge your thoughts on the soundtrack of Mega Man X, Al McCormick?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the soundtrack. It's fucking hard rock and heavy metal, like right on my street. Yeah, there's some cracking tunes on the soundtrack.
But when you were talking about the difference between the SNES, the kind of sounds that the SNES creates and the sounds that the Mega Drive creates, because we were talking about how the Mega Drive was really good at emulating that kind of guitar sound.
Yeah.
But a lot of Mega Man X's soundtrack sounds kind of, it sounds like fucking like glam rock or some shit. Not glam rock, but it was feel like that kind of fucking, I don't know what you call it, like fucking
yeah, like, that kind of sort of driving rock stuff. Yes, it's pretty good at that. It uses kind of a lot of like sampled guitars and stuff. There's actually a, if you go on YouTube and you look up Mega Man X soundtrack on Genesis, somebody's covered it on the Sega Mega Drive sound chip and used all those guitars, and it sounds amazing, possibly even better. But yeah, I think the Mega Drive was kind of maybe a bit better at that sort of sound, but they've done a pretty good job on it on Mega Man X on the SNES.
The SNES has got a better sound chip than the Mega Drive,
isn't
it?
It's got a different sound chip,
so,
as I
can. This was covered in episode 1 at length.
No, we're not going to retread old ground.
I'm thinking that, you know how you've got your
sequencers
that you use on a computer?
Yeah.
Did you use, look, I know you use software like that for the Mega Drive to just put it straight into the game, but see with SNES, was it a different technique? The sounds were already sampled.
SNES was more about samples, whereas the Mega Drive functioned more like a synthesizer.
Yeah, you had to actually synthesize the sound from scratch. The thing about the Mega Drive, it's that FM synthesis I was talking about. Even in the day, like that was quite a, it wasn't a new technology. It's quite complicated. Like if you know how to use like an old analog synthesizer for the 1970s or stuff, it doesn't translate over to an FM synth. It's a completely different way of working, and it was. In the synths that come out where you could use it, it was all kind of hidden in menus, and you had to kind of like press buttons to get between the menus to change things. It wasn't very immediate, so it was quite tough to work with. So I think the Mega Drive was kind of the same. Like if you didn't know what you were doing and you try to make a soundtrack in the Mega Drive, it's going to sound terrible. But if you take the time to learn it, you can get really good at it. But it's kind of, I'm not an expert on how music was actually made for consoles at the time, but it's more like a kind of, if you've ever seen a tracker, you're essentially like you're typing in numbers of like a number in hex for a parameter. Like one parameter would be the note you're playing, and one parameter would be what the sound is, and then you just do that for every note.
Right.
It's quite complicated. I think generally people would like, they'd maybe write out the tune on a piano or on an instrument or something first, and then have to translate that into code, essentially, data.
People used to actually write tunes in assembly
back in the day. Yeah, well, if you're coding for the Mega Drive, you're coding in assembly, which blows my mind.
How are you meant to... How do you code a note?
Well, if you think of like what a note is, there's different parameters. There's the note you're playing, like the actual... Is it A, B, C, G sharp? There's... the parameters that decide the tone of the sound. I think you kind of on the Mega Drive you'd have to type in the parameters of the operators and synthesize a sound, and then you'd save that as an instrument, and then you would say play this note in this instrument, play this note in that instrument. For the SNES, you're like either finding a sample, you're recording a sample of a guitar or a sample of a harp or whatever, or getting it from a library, and then you're saying play this sample at this pitch for this amount of time.
There you go, troops.
Right. You want to give us your final thoughts on X before we move on?
Yep, final thoughts on me. I'm not going to grade it. I'm not going to do the review thing.
Oh, we know you like it.
I do like the game, and I've just got a wee bit more. I want to say something that I prepared last night.
Go for it.
And this is my final word on Mega Man X. Mega Man, Mega Man, what is the haps? Dodging projectiles across well-designed maps. The bosses are solid until all becomes clear. An easier time comes with power-up gear.
I'm in heaven.
I hope this is a regular feature. Oh my god, there's more!
Your adventure is so hard, at times it gets tough. But if you had a Wiley, you get plenty of muff.
Yo! Mic drop!
That was the last thing I expected on this podcast.
Yeah. How the fuck do we follow that?
Guess I've got to talk about Shining Force 2 now.
Well, not bad.
Well, the reason I picked Shining Force 2 for yourself, I wasn't going to give you an RPG, but we got into talking about Soleil, Crusader Ascenti, and you were saying that Mega Drive RPGs maybe a wee bit thin on the ground, which they are. I'm not a fan of Phantasy Star and things like that. We can maybe delve into that further in another episode. But Shining Force 2, and Shining Force 1 as well, to be fair, they're an exception. Like, strategy RPGs, just those two alone, put the Mega Drive ahead of the SNES on that specific subgenre. Because if you ever try to play a strategy RPG on the SNES, there are these, a couple of titles published by Enix that are really fucking hard to play, and you have to be nerdy and read the instruction manual and fucking there's hundreds of rules. Shining Force, you can pick up and play and get it. My experience with it, a bit like yourself, came from ROMs. I never owned this game. It was maybe when I was in my teens and I was playing Chrono Trigger for the first time, Final Fantasy VI, all these classics, Earthbound. And I remember thinking, where are the Sega games? And seeing people on forums going, there aren't good RPGs on the Sega. And personally feeling like, that can't be true, because I had a Sega. Sega's not shite. And then delving a wee bit deeper and people saying the Shining Force series is one to look at. And it's addictive as fuck. It's basic, but when you start doing battles, you just want to keep playing them. But let's hear what McCormick thought.
Yeah, I totally agree. To be honest, I spent much longer playing this than I did Sonic Spinball, just because I was getting right into it. It's addictive, as Mick says. It's just kind of one more battle, you know, and before you know it, it's 4 in the morning and you've got to wake up for work soon.
And it's starting to get light.
But yeah, I think right off the bat, it makes a good impression. Like, you've got an intro kind of cutscene if you leave it playing. I don't remember there being very many games on the Mega Drive with that. Where you get the, you've got Slade, you know, breaking in.
I fucking love Slade.
Slade is cool.
Well, not, it's Christmas! sorry for that, if you get headphones in, by the way.
Slade is an anthropomorphic rat thief. He's cool. You've got the intro.
Is that all a bit like, Turtles?
He wasn't a thief, he was like a sensei. He's a martial arts guy.
If Splinter from the Turtles fucked Noddy Holder and they had a mutant baby, it would be Slade for Shining Force.
Emma Lumen
at parties in the shoes, man. The intro sequence is pretty cool. You've got him kind of robbing these rings of light and darkness, and then you've also got the king in his castle and kind of stuff's happening. It's like, oh, it's stormy outside, something ominous is happening. Right off the bat, you're kind of invested. I noticed the very start, I love the character portraits. All the characters have got these really expressive portraits. Like, you know, everything you kind of need to know about the character just by looking at them. Even like the wee shopkeepers, the wee dwarf guys, they've got pure haggard faces. They look really cool. I love that. I've wrote in my notes here, one of the lines of the intro is when the kind of storm's going on and the king's little advisor says, "Did you feel something evil?" Which I thought was a pretty good line. Oh, yeah, something evil. Like, yeah, I know what you mean.
This morning when I had to go into work and I was a bit hungover and my belly was full of pasta and beer and red wine, I felt something fucking evil. I had to go to the toilet.
There was an old wind about the place.
Yeah.
The only thing I didn't like about fucking Shining Force, man, and that's goes for both games, fucking bats.
The bats. Oh yeah, the vampire bats.
Fucking poison bats, man.
Yeah, they fuck you over. And they've got spells as well. Like, I get shocked. This is maybe skipping ahead a bit, but like, the first time you get hit with a spell that can go across multiple squares, and then all of a sudden, like, it's the vampire bat's taking out like 5 members of your party, and once you're like, no!
You learn to spread them out, because the spells are all quite area of effect. So if you've got all your guys clumped together and somebody hits you with like a fireball, it's hitting like 4 cunts at once.
Yeah. I was like talking about the battle system. So initially I kind of thought, like, okay, this is a bit simplistic, like Mick kind of sort of flippantly said it's maybe a kind of strategy RPG for babies.
Baby's first RPG, or baby's first strategy RPG.
Yeah, but actually, like, the more I think about it, like, so the one I'm kind of, the strategy RPG series I've got the most experience with is your Final Fantasy Tactics series. In Final Fantasy Tactics, you've got your group of characters, you've got a whole selection of classes that you can choose between. You you've got archers, you've got mages, every one of them's got a big list of abilities, and you can equip abilities for two classes, and like there's so much stuff going on that you kind of, you focus on that side, you don't really focus on the kind of second to second actual strategic decisions making, that you're making. Whereas in Shining Force 2, because it's quite stripped back, there's not very much that the characters can do. You have to focus on the actual strategy, you have to focus on positioning your characters, you have to focus on what sort of terrain they're in, you have to, as we were saying about magic, you have to position them so that the area of effect of Barry's magic doesn't get them all.
Everybody can pretty much do, like, two things, or even your mages, they have a maximum of four spells, you know what I mean? There's not a lot that individuals are actually capable of.
I really like that, actually. I think it could have maybe done with a wee bit more in that. I think maybe to kind of differentiate the characters, it'd be good to have even just like one special ability or something. But yeah, it kind of, I like, for example, that you can only hold four items at a time, so you have to be quite clever about who you're going to give your healing items to, and which weapons you're going to give people. That's, like that
also has an annoying thing though, where you want to buy new weapons and it's like, I want a sword for Tony, and they're like, nah, Tony's got four items. And it's like, okay, I'll stop talking to you, go to the menu, switch a fucking healing herb over to Jane, and then buy the fucking sword.
Yeah, the user interface is horrible. Like, oh, I'm sorry, I can't sell you that because you've not got enough room in your pockets. Imagine going into a shop and hearing that. Does it make any sense?
Turning back a lot of business.
Do you remember, I know a tactical RPG this is, however, do you remember a game called Advance Wars?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Aye.
I never got that into the Advance Wars series, but now that I think about it, there's definitely a lot of parallels, and even more so with Fire Emblem.
I was going to say that. Aye.
Yeah.
I played a ROM of Advance Wars, it's good.
Aye, Second Man's good too, but it's not got any RPG elements, obviously, but it's just following tactical fucking warfare.
I'm interested to hear, right, so this is what I was thinking about. I want to hear what your kind of main battle strategy. See, if you get into a big Rami in Shining Force 2, I want to hear what you would kind of, how you would play it out versus how I would play it out, because I have pretty much one thing that I do for every battle.
Is it just like pick an enemy out and surround them?
No,
that I do a lot of that, but there's a few different considerations. Like, I try and move my party at the speed of the slowest character. So what you don't want is like one character being something like Chester, who's really fast, or he can move quite a lot.
Because he's a centaur. Yeah. Oh, another great thing about this game, full of centaurs.
Yeah. Oh, there was one thing that I actually burst out laughing at. It was kind of unintentional. So at the start of the game, you go into the classroom and you're getting taught by Sir Astral, and you speak to the priest, who I've forgotten her name, and it's like, oh, you don't sit here, you sit next to Chester. So you go and you see Chester from behind, you see his two back legs, and he's top sitting on a chair, and then you go and sit beside Chester, and then something happens, and then Sir Astral leaves, and Chester turns around, and you see that he's a centaur. How was he sitting on the school chair?
See, I don't know if this is just the way my mind works, right, but you go to the classroom at the start, Chester is nowhere in his trousers. He's a centaur. Chester's going to have a big old horse stick. Like,
that's just not,
just flopping
that's just
about
not acceptable. Like, flaunting the dress code completely.
I would hate to sit next to Chester because I would feel like I had a small penis every day of my life.
So, yeah, battle strategy, as we were saying, I would move my players at the speed of the slowest character.
Which is going to be your priestess, the kind of healer, I think she's...
Yeah, or the little dwarf warrior guy. Sometimes I would kind of split the party in two if there was enemies in different places. But yeah, I would kind of try and isolate baddies. You don't want to get surrounded because you can maybe take out one of your guys in a couple of goes before you get the chance to heal them. And yeah, like, just try and get the positioning right so that people are in spaces with good land effect, which is... It took me a while to figure out what that actually meant. They have higher defence if they're in a place with better land effect, but that doesn't work all the time. But yeah, I think it was all really about kind of positioning and making sure your guys were in the right place at the right time for me.
My one strategy that I use in every fight is that And this is kind of a headcanon thing where I've made a story within a story, just in my own brain, where within the team of Shining Force, I had an Alpha team and a Bravo team.
Ah, I kind of right. did that as well. Yeah.
Where Bravo team for me, Alpha team, they weren't there slagging them off. Alpha team had the main character, Peter and Chester and that, the Centaur and the Phoenix. Like, they were all kind of big hitter guys. The obvious choices, right?
Yeah.
But in Bravo team, for me, they were fucking psyops. You had Slade and you had the mage guy in that, and they would sneak around the side and come in later in the battle, maybe when Alpha team started getting beat back a bit, and it kind of fucking, it was like getting your forces replenished, because Bravo team would swoop in, start backstabbing and casting spells and shit, and I loved that.
That's pretty good tactic, because the thing as well, I think most modern RPGs has some way of kind of, it distributes the XP so that your whole party's kind of leveling up an even kill. It doesn't do that in Shiny Force, which means
it's a nightmare to try and level people up.
If you don't know what you're doing, you can end up with some of your party at like level 30 and some of them are still at level 10. So the strategy of having an A team and a B team means that your B team get to finish off baddies and you get the most experience of finishing off a baddie. So if they're fighting in the same party as a big hitter, then they're just not going to get any XP and they're going to lag behind.
That was how Slade got so powerful.
I'm trying that with Slade, but I find it really difficult. He gets defeated so quickly. I really want to love him because he's a cool rat thief guy and he just looks badass.
You turn him into a ninja when he gets to level 20 and he gets magic and he's amazing. So you want to say something there, Andy?
I was just going to say, obviously Shining Force, it's just sort of, you do a bit in the town.
So have you played the first one only, am I right in saying?
I've only played the first one.
Right, so how does the first one differ from the second one?
They're
very similar, but I think the second one's got more RPG elements.
The second one's... I suppose there's room for argument. The second one's considered better, okay. Like the first one, but more. And they do
one,
more with what they've got. And
the first one,
fights are a bit better.
30 maps, and you just sort of.
Is it just kind of fight? Some dialogue fight?
Yeah, build your character.
That's what the second one is.
Go to your next area, do your wee bit, go to your shop, whatever, and then go fight again. Go to your next area, go in, pull up, boom, next fight. Do that 30 times. But obviously, it's just addictive as fuck, man. I played the first one on. Do you know what that game is?
Yeah, the kind of cheap sort of Sega Mega Drive plug and play console. Oh, yeah,
I got one of them, right? And it's like a SNES Mini, but it's just pure. It's made in China and it's crap quality and that, right? It's just
the emulation's pretty dodgy. You mentioned like the sound quality being just garbage.
Sound is garbage, right? It's too slow. The notes for some reason are wild. it's just bad emulation. But see, Shining Force 1 on it. That was a game that stood out. It had like your Sonics and your Columns and your Streets of Rage and stuff.
Don't you fucking diss Columns. You take that look. Columns is amazing.
Columns, alright. Yeah,
I'm giving you Columns 3 today, right?
What games that you played as a win, but then Shining Force was there. It's a game you've always kind of heard about, you know, through the ether. It's a chance to play it. And I don't know what the real music sounds like to this day, but the music was fucking guff, man. So I need to play. That's on my tip list, man, both of them, and the third one as well, which is apparently impossible to get for the Saturn.
Ah.
I think it's sitting at £600 just now.
Jeez,
on
so. Yeah, I thought that the music has, yeah, I've got this, I'm the music guy now, but I was kind of saying,
music man.
I was saying last episode about the Mega Drive perhaps not being suited to these kind of sweeping orchestral scores you'd get in something like Final Fantasy VI. But actually, I'm kind of eating my words now, because Shining Force 2 found a way, and that way is brass. The Mega Drive is quite good at making brass sounds, and the soundtrack of Shining Force 2, there's loads of brass, and it sounds all quite kind of, yeah, sort of magisterial, and like just like you've got a big
King's Palace, it sounds all kind of,
yeah. Yeah, so I thought they did that a really good job of kind of working with what they had. I like the soundtrack. That soundtrack is pretty strong.
Cool. And a bounty game?
Well, it's not. I'm maybe about halfway through it. I think the length is probably as it should be.
They're a bit shorter tactical RPGs, aren't they?
Not necessarily, but this one's a bit. I like that there's kind of no messing about. Like, you don't really need to grind if you don't want it. It's got a great feature that I think more games should have, whereas that if you don't win a fight, you just get sent back to the last church you were in, and you lose half your money, but you keep the XP, so you don't need to grind and then fight. You grind by just, you know, keeping throwing yourself at the baddies again. And I found the difficulty I'm playing it on hard, and I find that quite good. It's challenging enough to be interesting, but it's never really, you never feel like you're under-leveled. You feel that it's, you know, just your own strategy that's letting you down.
One thing that stood out to me about it is, usually being a bit of a big nerd, and I like playing fucking CRPGs and shit where you need to read a lot. Like, I'll click through like a heavy reading fucking isometric bullshit thing for hours. Shining Force 2, I couldn't really be fucked talking to people. I didn't really want to go about and talk to townspeople.
You don't really need to.
I just wanted more fights. Like, Final Fantasy, you get sometimes that the random battles impede your enjoyment. You're like, I want to see what happens next, man. I can't be fucked fighting 2 million things to get through this cave. Whereas Shining Force 2, I was like, cool, princess has been kidnapped, right, got you. Cool, big fight, yes!
It doesn't fuck about, and I really appreciate that. It doesn't waste the player's time. Like, as I was saying, like, even random battles, like, you get maybe one random battle where you first enter a map, and then that's it. So you can go back to that map, you can wander around, you can find things without worrying about, like, random battles every couple of steps. In the story, like, I mean, if you're expecting like an epic, like a Final Fantasy, you're going to be disappointed. The story's pretty basic, but it does the job. It kind of gets you from one fight to the next.
Yeah, good and evil princess captured.
Yeah, and it was quite kind of funny in some bits as well. Like the whole bit where like they're going to the demon world or whatever, and you're grabbing on, trying to hold on to him, and then you fall off. Like,
massively serious.
Yeah, I found it quite endearing. And also, yeah, I appreciated after your thing last episode about the kind of lack of father figures in RPGs.
Shining Force 2, right up there.
No, Dad isn't even mentioned. No. And actually, what I found funny was that the main character's mum is so unimportant that she doesn't even get a character portrait. Doesn't have a unique sprite. You see other women in other towns and they're the same as your mum. That's how little they care about her.
Did you do this thing after Grand Seal got destroyed and you moved to New Grand Seal? Mm-hmm. I was like, I better check that my mum's okay. It took me ages to find her because she looks like all the other women.
Yeah, generic wifey sprite.
Which one did you prefer? Did you prefer Final Fantasy Tactics or this one?
They're very different. I think if I was designing the kind of like ideal strategy RPG in my head, it'd maybe be somewhere in between. Final Fantasy Tactics has got, you can get lost for hours in stats and in abilities and stuff like that.
You like that? That sounds good.
Yeah. I've talked before to Mick about the calculator class in Final Fantasy Tactics.
It sounds riveting.
Yeah. Oh mate, you would love this.
They'll say, yeah.
It's getting bootless upside down.
The calculator.
That would be your top move, right?
The calculator is a class you unlock close to the end of the game, and it has abilities that involve in maths, so you do mathematical formulas based on how high the baddie is in the level or how much HP he has. It might only damage characters with a certain amount of HP or something, and if you know a bit of maths, you can destroy the entire party. That's ridiculous. That sums up Final Fantasy Tactics.
Nerd magic.
Yes, just, yeah, exactly.
I'm just writing down, never play this game.
Andy, your game for week 3 will be
Math Blaster 3.
But yeah, Shining Force was, as I was saying, it's a lot more simple, but the decisions you take have a bit of weight. I think somewhere in between the two, you know, if you maybe had a wee bit more to Shining Force, I'd maybe enjoy it a bit more. But yeah, I just love that it kind of, it's got no fat, it doesn't fuck about. So I thought that was really well done.
Give me your best criticism of the game.
Some of the systems, like your kind of the land effect and stuff like that, like that seems like it's going to be really important, and then it turns out not to be. I think it'd be good if they kind of delved into that a wee bit, where like
too many of the characters are just move and hit, like that's
So if they made some of that if they made some of those systems like a wee bit more important, like you had to think a wee bit about where you positioned your characters, and maybe you could like you could kind of try and funnel the baddies into places where you'd have the high ground and you could attack them, like just some more kind of tactical considerations. But I don't think it would take very much to improve on it. I never played any of the sequels, but apparently the sequels don't really move too much for the formula.
The sequels are episodic as well, apparently.
Is that three? Three's episodic?
Three's slightly different. But you can get the Saturn version, which I think has got, I don't know, I might be wrong here, but it's got all them together. But as I said, it's impossible to play. Saturn's hard to emulate.
Yeah.
And there's certain games on there, such as Radiant Silverpin, Panzer Dragoon Saga, and Shining Force 3, that possibly will be worth a fortune for years to come, because depending on who you believe, source codes have went missing and stuff. So you might struggle to play Shining Force 3, to be honest.
Was there anything you've left unsaid, or do you want to give us some final thoughts on Shining Force 2?
My final thought about Shining Force 2 is the upgraded version of a priest in the game is a vicar, and that is that's inherently offensive to me.
As Protestantism is an upgrade of Catholicism.
We're reaching levels of Protestantism we never thought possible.
Shame on you, Shining Force. Is that the
final
thought?
That's it.
It's a good final thought. Right, no, fucking, you mad bastard. What's your thinking behind gaming Night Trap to play?
Oh, right,
let me get my fucking notes up.
Right, there was a wee period in the early 90s, right, when... Remember, games would come either on a cartridge or they would come on a 3.5 inch floppy, man. They would have maybe a couple of megabyte storage.
Yep.
Right, okay, so... But you remember the Sega CD came out and it promised real-life graphics and that, no? You're going to love this, man.
Well, they thought for a while that full-motion video was...
The future.
Was better than 3D. Some people really banked on that as if this is the future of games, not 3D fucking polygonal shit.
A lot of stuff ended up... This quick time events in Shenmue.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? Like, it'd be button press, press now, press now, press now. Gets to a certain point in these games, like Rad Racer, like Batman Returns, where you realise that you're just following a sequence.
A lot of those Telltale games who actually went bust, shout out to Telltale going bust.
Shout out to Telltale's employees, not their fucking bosses that never paid them any severance.
I said Rad Racer, and that's wrong.
What did you mean?
What's the game that I'm thinking about?
A Wing Commander or something?
No, it's a Sega CD game. It's about the Time Girl, right? I'll just go with Time Girl. This is a mad Japanese game, right? And it's just fucking crazy. There's this lassie, she's not got a story in it, and you just quick time event her way through fucking climbing, abseiling, fucking jumping about, killing fucking beasts.
Oh, it's a bit like that, what's the one, the cartoon one? Dragon something or other.
Oh, Dragon's Lair.
Yeah, it's like Dragon's Lair.
You had Space Ace.
It
was that you watched a cutscene and you... They played it in season 2 of Stranger Things.
Yeah.
Where you move the joystick and it plays out a cartoon.
That's it.
Those are cool though.
Sure Shark as well was another one. And do you remember, at the start of these games, it would go, right, to get these people out, we have to use this special device, and it'd be a Mega Drive control pad.
Oh, I love that.
that's a Night Trap.
That's a Night Trap, dude.
Yeah. The intro to Night Trap is amazing. Sorry if I'm stealing Mick's thunder, but I love it. I love it especially, it does this kind of 90s thing. Well, actually, the thing you're using to activate the traps is called the SCAT system. I love that.
That's deliberate, though. They're fucking juvenile.
But yeah, it does this really cool 90s thing where it's like, if you don't think you can handle this duty, give the controller to someone that can, and then you're playing, it's like, I can fucking handle this, of course I can fucking handle this.
Also, they had to watch because they could easily get done for false advertisement. Real life graphics, really, when you look at Sonic CD, which is just a conventional
it's
game.
It's full motion video, but it's compressed so much that there's about 5 pixels essentially for the video.
It's still running through the Mega Drive.
Yeah.
The video output is coming through the Mega Drive.
So the Sega CD, I mean, you had much more storage when using a CD, but they didn't really have the processing power to do anything with it. Anyway, sorry, we're going a bit on a tangent. Why did you give Mick? Right. Why did you give Mick specifically Night Trap?
From a cultural standpoint, right, there's been a lot better games than Night Trap that have been forgot about. Night Trap is still relevant today, and it's still getting releases today because it's cultural impact, which I'm sure you're going to talk about.
I'm going to do a bit about that because something happened that I quite like.
Let's not look at gameplay here. Let's not look at something like Shining Force 2 that's all about reading stats and learning the game. This is just pure balls to the wall fucking madness, man.
I think you did
a good job at it, and that's why I gave you it. Rock on.
Right. The first thing, I didn't get it. When you gave us it, I had to go to my wee brother's house to play it because he actually bought a physical copy. They brought out a special fucking...
PS4?
Special edition for the PS4. Aero,
which is amazing to me.
Aero, mad bastard, bought it. He's got a poster with Dana Plato and the fucking...
Oh my god.
Logo. He's like, my wee brother really likes this game. I didn't hate it, by the way. It's not terrible, the first thing I did was I started reading about Dana Plato, and it made me really sad. Lassie's fucking story, RIP very much. She starred in this while she was in the midst of a fucking downward spiral with drinking drugs. Although she was the first, I think, featured actor in an FMV game. She was the first person to do it kind of big.
Who did she play in the game?
She's the mate. She's like
the one that's a double agent.
She's Scat's agent in the house.
Yeah.
So basically she's the one that survives and you have to protect her at the end.
Yeah.
But the one thing I wanted to share about her backstory is that in the midst of her kind of worst crises, after some cunt had bumped her, stole all her money, she was into drinking drugs and stuff like that, she went into a video shop and pulled a gun on this guy.
Oh my god.
And robbed $200 from the cash register.
Wow.
And this is an exact quote.
Aye,
the guy phoned the police and went, "Here, I've just been robbed by the lassie that played Kimberly on different strokes." In case she got arrested like 20 minutes later.
Try fucking getting by that one.
Here's a mistaken identity there, officer.
It's a very creepy episode.
Are you seeing a paedophile episode of fucking Different Strokes? We're going off on a tangent no. here.
Like. Every kid's cartoon had a kind of like a special episode about, yeah, there's one of
the
smart guy.
I showed you the smart guy paedophile episode and it made your skin crawl so fucking much. You thought about that for weeks.
I did, because like, if I was a kid and somebody told me I've got some like pirated copies of games that aren't out yet, I'd go to his house.
So you meet somebody in a chat room.
That's just taking advantage of fucking innocence.
Smart guy meets a guy in a chat room and he's like, "Hey, my name's Marky. I've got all the hottest new games."
Fucking
and
idiots, man.
And then it goes
but
to
for
me.
The grace, but for the grace of God, that was me.
Night Trap takes the, you know, these kind of Five Nights at Freddy's things. When I first get the controller and I was having my first crack at it, you're still laughing about paedophiles, shame on you. We had these, so you're looking at different TV screens, you've got different cameras that you can flick between. The whole conceit of the game is flicking between cameras, and then these little monster creatures come out called augers, and you get one at the right point on the screen, you hit a button, it sets off a trap, and you've captured or killed. I don't actually know what happens if you capture them or kill them.
Yeah, I don't know, actually.
They're meant to be vampires, but that's just pure lore, are they?
The augers, if you really want to get into it, because I've watched the cutscenes, is...
Well, do you want to explain the kind of basic plot of the game?
You're a part of the scat team, as the guy says. There's only one person that can and it's Pooh. You're watching Dana Plato. Her and her pals for the mall are pals with this creepy lassie, and she's like, "Oh, I'm on up to my house for the weekend." And her family are vampires, straight up ancient evil vampires.
This is, you only find this out at the end of the game, but it's so obvious. Her parents are so creepy. Her dad kind of looks and dresses like Pee Wee Herman.
Yeah.
As soon as you see him, like, something's not right about these guys.
So the augers are like half vampires, but their blood is so low that they couldn't turn into proper vampires, so their skin falls off and that.
They've not got enough blood.
They're low on blood.
So it's not sitting and pulled at their legs,
is
it?
Maybe. The chupacabra's got them. But no. So the augers are low on blood, so they have to wear these special suits. And the evil family are saying that they merely have to feed the augers, that they are doing it out of goodness, because these poor augers wouldn't survive otherwise.
So they lure teenagers to the house.
They lure teenage lassies to get into bikinis so that the augers can eat them and drink their blood.
Of course.
It makes perfect sense.
It's quite an exploitative game.
Actually, it's quite engaging. At first, I thought it was going to feel like a non-game, but flicking between the screens and trying to catch them out actually kind of draws you in a wee bit. My first attempt at it lasted about 10 minutes. Things happen in it where you start off and it's like you have different codes that are colours, right? So you start off and you're on blue, and if you're on the right colour of trap, that makes the traps work.
Right.
But at different points in the game, you have to be watching a specific screen, because the parents say to one of the creepy teenage boys, "Change your traps to red."
Right.
And then you have to change it to red or else your traps don't work. And then the augers will go and fucking do some kind of evil necrophile magic on the girls.
So what's this thing they've got? It looks like something about fucking gold.
That's the device they use to drink the blood for young girls.
Christ. Does it show you fucking...
No, fucking...
So this game is so controversial, but actually, the violence and stuff in it is really tame.
Yeah. Well,
it's implied. It's more implied.
If you want to go into the whole Senate hearing,
right, here we go. Get yourself comfy. Pause the podcast. Get yourself a cup of tea. This is where this gets good.
Right. So, Night Trap was so controversial, along with Mortal Kombat, that it brought about a Senate hearing, because at this point in time, there were no age ratings on games, so people were horrified that kids could just go in and fucking buy them, which, quite right. I don't think 12-year-olds should be able to fucking go in and buy prostitute killing simulators.
I think that's fair enough.
Yeah. But anyway, so the thing about the Senate hearing was that you could tell none of these people had ever actually played Night Trap. You had fucking Senator Joseph Lieberman.
No shout out to Joe Lieberman. He's a prick.
He's still a fucking senator, isn't
he? Yes, yeah, he's about 100 years old.
There was a guy called Herbert Cole he called Night Trap especially morally repugnant, even next to Mortal Kombat. During the hearing, most of them are very concerned that the game promotes violence against women, that it's some kind of rape by murder simulator, which would be a legitimate concern, but it's also evident that none of them fucking play that, because there isn't blood in this, other than the vampires drink blood that looks like fucking Tizer. And the one scene where the lassie's there's a lassie getting changed, and if you don't activate the traps, the augurs come in and they put that thing round their neck that you were talking about that looks as if it's about to drill into her. Yeah, but they pull her backstage before anything even happens. The most notable thing, boys, about the Senate hearing for me was fucking Howard Lincoln. He was the president of Nintendo America at the time, and he was there to testify. For instance, he sat there and he said, "Nintendo will never allow Night Trap on any of our systems. Night Trap would not pass our guidelines." It wouldn't play on a Nintendo system. They didn't have anything that would play fucking Nintendo.
They'd have a CD drive.
They were spoil sports. They took your blood out of Mortal Kombat and everything, didn't they, bastards?
There's a bit where Howard Lincoln sits there and he's being a fucking teacher's pet. Fucking Joseph Lieberman and stuff are going on about how fucking the games industry's all fucked up and stuff. And Howard Lincoln interjects at one point and goes, "Our version of Mortal Kombat doesn't have blood." And he basically goes, "Very good, Howard, actually, Nintendo are more responsible than Sega. Put that down." He's fucking... Howard Lincoln is there to turn the whole thing into... Nintendo is a family-friendly product. Let your kids play Nintendo.
And Sega are, like, morally bankrupt. He's obviously got a vested interest.
The guy Bill White is there on behalf of Sega. And Bill White is... He's a bit more like Ferris Bueller. You can imagine him with his feet up in the desk. He's kind of
on backwards.
He's kind of Sega cool.
He does with Nintendo.
He sits there and he goes, "The video you just played is one scene that you've showed out of context. Like, if you took any horror movie and just showed a murder, you could use it to justify any number of fucking things." But what I would like to say before anything gets all fucking fucking censorship in games. At no point during the hearing do any of the senators advocate an outright ban. In fact, they stress a couple of times that they're not in favour of censorship, but they do think that the age rating guidelines should be. I think Night Trap got unfairly dragged down, if you compare it to Mortal Kombat, where you can rip a spinal column out and hold it aloft above your head. But I think Night Trap got unfairly dragged through the mud. I don't think that Senate hearing actually led to anything bad. In fact, I think although it's fucking very little adhered to when you get grannies fucking buying GTA 5 for 8-year-olds anyway.
It led to fucking shareholders seeing dividends, man, as a result of that thing, because think about it, Night Trap would have just died off and would have just been another FMV game if it wasn't for this.
Well, boys, can I tell you something? Can I tell you my little fuck Howard Lincoln point? How he said that Night Trap will never appear on Nintendo, it wouldn't pass our guidelines. Night Trap came out for the Nintendo Switch! Yes!
There you go.
Fuck him.
That's his legacy.
I've got some questions about the story of this game, because I didn't subject myself to it, but I did watch like a kind of long play. So my idea of kind of what it was like, you'd probably spend most of your time kind of in the story sequences.
You don't watch the story. You're too busy flicking between screens to try and get the augurs. So, if you watch anything, you get you know that awesome music video where they go, "Night Trap, they're gonna find you."
I love that.
"Night Trap." I like the tune. if you actually watch that, you get a game over the second second that fucking finishes because like 10 augers have got into the house.
Yeah, so I thought it'd be quite kind of slow burning, like you'd get most of the story, but occasionally there'd be an auger. There's about 10 monsters in the first 15 seconds of the game. You're constantly flicking through. There's a fucking battalion of vampires besieging this house. I thought there'd just be a couple of them, which kind of calls the whole story into question, because it's like, right, we need it's pretty dubious that the scat team are like, we need these lassies to go in the house in order to lure these ogres in. What I'd be saying is, like, there's a small army of vampires descending this house, like, fuck a team. No, we need the fucking National Guard. We need helicopters. We need tanks. Get in this house. Yeah, like, why do they need to have, like, a team of lassies in order to lure them out? And then you use traps. They should have fucking brought in the fucking big hitters.
You should have phoned in fucking Quentin Tarantino and George Clooney.
I should have got my wee brother on this. My wee brother actually fucking completed it during the week. Shout out to Aero. He was the one that let me play it. And he was actually texting me going, I keep thinking about Night Trap, and I want to do another playthrough and try and catch all the augers. I think there's over 100 of them.
There is over 100 of them, yeah.
Do you see all the augers dying?
You get
the animation, the video sequences are most, there are a lot of recycled ones.
It's the same ones over and over again, but when you see them for the first time, they are really funny.
Yeah.
There's one where somebody springs off the roof. That's my favourite one.
In the playthrough, I watched that happen about 10 times, and it was funnier every time.
What's the movie there? What was a fucking constipated man?
Dun.
But yeah. Listen, it's a fucking laugh, isn't it?
Is that fun? Like,
There was some points watching it, I just laughed out loud. Why is there traps? Why does the house have traps? I didn't really understand that point.
The vampire seems to be aware of the traps. Because when you get to the end sequence, you start, because you've got rid of the augers and it's just Dana Plato running away from the actual family, the real vampires, and they chase her through several rooms. And Dana Plato does this thing where she turns around to the camera and goes, "Come on, help me! Use the traps!" Which seems like it maybe should have came at the start of the game, because it's explaining to you how to play the game. But anyway, there's a bit where they're in the bedroom and the mommy vampire is coming towards her and she's like, "Yo, use the traps, come on!" So you hit the button to use a trap and the wardrobe pushes out, the mum springs back onto the bed, and then she goes, "Wardrobe trap?" And then the dad vampire goes, "Oh, we got that put in. I was going to surprise." So he knows the traps are there. Like, I don't know. Like, I think it's their security system that you've hacked into, maybe.
It is, yeah. But I mean, if they built the traps, like, did they have to trap the ogres sometimes? Did they build it for the ogres?
Because
I thought they were in league with the ogres. I don't know, it doesn't make much sense.
There's also this wee cunt called... He's called...
Eddie.
Billy. Eddie.
Yeah.
He's the nerdy guy that lives, like, next door.
Yeah.
Like, there's this... He's me.
I like Eddie.
He's, like, he's the only kid in town that's, like... There's fucking vampires in that house, man. Nobody's listened to me. I've seen them. And he invents a blaster gun that, like, destroys my...
Tell me something, please. See the guys at the start, like the CIA guys at the start?
Yeah, scat team.
Did they appear again?
Oh, yeah, they're in it, but...
There's a bit near the end where, like, they send in a team of guys with shotguns, and actually, there's a really kind of horrible, stereotypical, jive-talking guy who's like, "Hey, what are these fucking vampires doing?"
Right, you want to talk about the black guy?
Yes.
Because there's a...
Carl Weathers?
No.
He pretty much is Carl Weathers.
Carl Weathers. There's a bit where he goes, "Think I'm going to get on to the inside to check things out." And then he goes, "I'm going to use the old Jamaican bit." And then he shows up at the front door and goes, "Hey man, Wagman, I'm going to be checking out the house. You want to buy some palm trees or some shit?" And he starts just saying all this mad Jamaican crap just so he can get in and have a look around. He does a stereotype. I think he wears a fucking hat with fake dreadlocks.
Oh, wow.
Does like a Rasta character.
That wouldn't fly these days.
Not a lot of things in Night Trap would fly, but nobody gets sexually assaulted or gets their tits out or fucking, there's no blood.
Aye, it was just hysteria.
It's a bit where a lassie eats what she thinks. She thinks it's a nice lolly, but it turns out to be frozen blood. And that makes the girls think...
I laugh for a good couple of minutes after seeing that.
Does she eat the whole thing off?
She takes a bite and is like, "This tastes like blood."
Does she know what it tastes like?
How you know what blood tastes like? You bite your gum or something?
I don't know, man.
I suppose. So, my kind of... closing thoughts, I guess, on Night Trap are, I was actually angry when Andy first gave me it. I was you could see in a group chat and that, I was sending kind of huffy messages and that, going like that. Oh, enjoying your games, boys. Aye, Mega Man X, classic, Shining Force Blue, classic. Guess I'll go and play fucking Night Trap.
Right, you could see, you could actually see Mick going through the seven stages of grief in real time, because at first he was like, I can't believe you gave me this. And then he was like, right, Andy, we need some ground rules. We needed some ground rules with what games are acceptable to put on. And then Mick was like, maybe this game's all right. I'm maybe actually kind of enjoying it. And then at the end he was like, Andy, I'm actually so glad you gave me this game. It's actually kind of made me a better person.
Yep. Your old dad will look after you, son, don't worry.
So I didn't hate it. It's pretty shite, right? It's a bit of a non-game. But in terms of camp entertainment value, see if you get it on one of these fucking e-stores for your Xbox, your PS4, your Nintendo Switch, fuck you, I'm Lincoln. It's worth a fiver just for the fucking curiosity.
No, I give you. I'm into all this moral panic sociology stuff, right?
Me too.
So I thought, fucking, I'm going to just deal with this. Because I know you're into your RPGs, man. And I knew that Night Trap is just fucking, like, it's something that you'd really ever touch.
Mick's one of these journalism thing about it, eh?
Listen.
I hope the Senate hearing bit wasn't boring.
I knew you would like it. And I'll tell you why. Because I knew there's this big fucking backstory to get your teeth into. And the backstory is actually better than the game.
Oh man, yeah, just reading about Dana Plato's life alone again. Fucking R.I.P. Dana, she went fucking through a ringer.
See if you stay to the end of the credits, there's actually a wee making of bit where it's like a room of people playing a beta of Night Trap, and it's just all these kind of older white men, and even they don't seem to be enjoying it very much when they're playing it.
Well, there's actually a thing where when you've got rid of all the vampires, Dana Plato turns to the camera and goes, thanks so much, we've did it together. And she walks over a trap and goes, nah, you wouldn't. And you can actually activate a trap at the end and fucking kill Dana Plato yourself.
That's an extra match, man.
That put it up a great, yeah,
aye,
for me.
On,
I love that.
I didn't actually get to that point. Actually, I should have asked Aero whether or not he killed Dana Plato at the end and if he let her walk away.
I'd have done it.
Dana Plato's been through enough. I would have let that lassie walk out.
One day, it's not whatever, is it? Just fucking add it on anything.
She was in a pornographic version of Different Strokes called Different Strokes, where it was a lesbian porn.
Oh,
it was vaguely the plot of
Different Strokes.
Different Strokes.
Like Different Strokes was the...
But Different Strokes
Different
was
had
like,
an apostrophe.
Yeah.
Ah, oh, right, okay.
It takes Different Strokes to move the world, right. Yes it does. But yeah, there you go, Night Trap. Give it my best, give it an honest go.
Yeah, happy days,
So, anything we want to sign off with, boys? Oh shit! We have to reveal what the next games are.
Right.
We nearly forgot that last time, Joe.
I'm gonna kick off. Andy, you fucking miserable prick! You guessed mine.
Yes.
You've got, but because I know about one game on the Sega Saturn,
there's only so many Saturn games out for
it. Your game is Guardian Heroes for the Sega Saturn.
Oh,
mate.
Nice!
I hope you enjoy it.
I had a wee gander on YouTube. It was fucking boss, man.
Right. There you go.
Cool.
What's your game for myself?
What's your game for you? Is it right? Okay. Now I'm a bit at a loss because you've played everything I've played, man. Basically, so I thought I'd throw you a wee curveball. How does the Amiga grab you?
Okay, tell me more.
Right, okay, so I was playing Mega Man X all week, right, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to get a platformer, man, right? And I know you love Sonic nearly as much as I do, and I know you like a wee Blaster Mario 10 and again, so I thought I'd give you a wee hybrid between the two and give you Super Frog.
Super Frog?
Amiga.
Ah, okay.
It's Team 17, man, good practice.
Oh, yeah, guys of Worms.
Yep.
Interesting.
Team 17, take that and party.
I've never played Super Frog, but I had a Games Master annual one year, and there was like a list of like top games on the Amiga, and there was a picture of Super Frog, and I always thought it looked pretty cool, like a kind of colourful platformer.
It's actually well regarded, it's not a shite.
I think I'll be quite into this.
Right, so we need to try and sort out a wee emulator for you, because I'm not too sure how Amiga works, man.
Figure it out.
Aye.
So for Mick, I chose this as soon as you get Night Trap, because you were that raging about getting Night Trap, so I thought I'll give Mick something that's kind of in his wheelhouse, who'd be into. So I'm going to give you Dragon Warrior Monsters for the Game Boy.
Oh,
Oh, I know about this, yeah. But I've never played it.
So it's kind of it was kind of derided at the time as a Pokemon clone, but actually I kind of maybe enjoy it a wee bit more than Pokemon.
It's got permadeath, if I'm not mistaken. Your monsters can die permanently.
But also, they don't evolve. You breed two monsters together to get a new one.
What's the game called?
Dragon Warrior Monsters. Dragon Quest Monsters, depending
on
your region.
Dragon Quest series.
It's a spin-off of Dragon Quest, yeah.
Alright, cool.
Alright, yeah, okay.
Into it.
But I think you'd be into it.
I look forward to playing that.
Oh, original Game Boy, is it? Game Boy Color?
I can't mind if it's original Game Boy or Color.
1998, probably for the Color of them. Game Boy Color, man.
Yeah.
I'm happy with that.
Right.
Right, boys.
Right, so we'll try and get you an emulator for the Amiga. Until next time. We are Dynamite Neddy.
Dynamite fucking Neddy.
Dynamite fucking Neddy.
See you after, troops.